This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at numberfire.com, and this is episode 11 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the Number Fire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. It's Friday, and that means it's a mailbag episode. So get your coffee, strap in, and let's do this thing. The first question is from at AJMarco65. He says, how big of an impact can Dalvin Cook have with the Vikings? Rookie of the Year contention. I want to say that I'd be shocked if Dalvin Cook won Rookie of the Year, but I guess shocked is too strong of a word. I'll just say this. I don't love his situation as much as others might love his situation. The Vikings last year had a terrible offensive line. It wasn't just the running back play. The offensive line was atrocious last season. They finished dead last in rushing efficiency, the Vikings did, and the team that was ranked 31st, the Buccaneers, the difference between the Buccaneers' efficiency and the Vikings' efficiency, that gap was just as big as the difference between the Buccaneers and the 23rd ranked Panthers. So the difference between 32 and 31 was greater than the difference between 31 to 23. It was that bad because the offensive line is not that strong. Now, the other side to this with Dalvin Cook, we know that to be a successful both fantasy and real, I mean, if we're talking about a rookie of the year, that means that you also need volume because you need to put up some sort of numbers to look like a rookie of the year. That matters. As much as people want to say it doesn't matter, numbers matter a ton when you're talking about something like Rookie of the Year. And you may look at these Minnesota running backs. You have Jerick McKinnon, Latavius Murray. By the way, Matt Asiata is not on the Vikings right now. I can't tell you how many times I've seen analysis over the last week or two talking about Matt Asiata being on the... He's not on the Vikings. He's not a Viking. But I think that you can look at this backfield and say, oh, they have Jerick McKinnon and Latavius Murray. Jerick McKinnon coming off a bad season where he finally was going to get the opportunity that we've all been waiting for, and he did nothing with it. And then with Latavius Murray, everything points to him being just a guy. And you might say, these running backs aren't that good. Or Cook, therefore, is the most talented running back in this backfield. Here's the problem. This is the same team that decided that a back who ran a 4.81 40 at the combine was better than a more talented athletic Jerick McKinnon last year. I'm talking about Matt Asiata, who had more carries within his opponent's 5-yard line last season than DeMarco Murray, Ezekiel Elliott, and Devontae Freeman. Matt freaking Asiata. Now, Latavius Murray was also 6th in football on those types of carries when he was in Oakland last year, and he scored 9 goal line touchdowns. So he could be the goal line back, and I'd expect Latavius Murray to still have some and see some early down work given they signed him to a 3-year deal this offseason. He got over $3 million guaranteed. There's something, they're tied to him in some way. He was also a guy that they went out and signed very quickly compared to other running backs on the free agency market. So as of today, I'm not that into Dalvin Cook for all the reasons that I just mentioned. And I think that he's going to be overdrafted in fantasy football as well, which means no, I don't like him as the rookie of the year this season. This next one is from at Western Subs on Twitter. He says, who do you think will be the running back or running backs that takes over for a non-producing incumbent mid-season? So the problem in analyzing something like this is that there aren't many incumbents who are the for sure starters in their backfield. Like, do we consider Ryan Matthews as one of those players? If so, then I guess Wendell Smallwood is one that I would look for that could take over a role or the role in that backfield right now. Or maybe Rob Kelly, if that's the case, then sure, Samaje Perine could be that guy. Joe Mixon's a guy who could start right away in that Cincinnati backfield. I think that there's a chance that Kareem Hunt could also take over in Kansas City. I think Kareem Hunt could be the answer to this question, at least as we stand on May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. We're still months away from the start of the NFL season. But with Kareem Hunt, if you look at his situation, Spencer Ware's the guy who's in his way. Spencer Ware's not a bad running back. I don't mind Spencer Ware, but last year was the first time he ever carried the ball more than 200 times in a single season, which includes college. At LSU, he never saw more than 177 carries. And he doesn't have that great of an athletic profile. I mean, there's a reason that Spencer Ware was a 6th-round pick. And if you look at 2015 versus 2016 for Spencer Ware, the biggest difference was big plays on the ground. In 2015, 12.5% of his rushes went for 10 or more yards, and 5.56% of them went for 20 or more yards. Now in 2016, his 10 or more yards rate was 9.35%, and his 20 or more yards rate was 1.40%. That 1.40% number was in the 10th percentile among 100 plus carry running backs. So my hypothesis as to why Spencer Ware's big playability dropped last year is because he saw more volume for the first time, a lot of volume for the first time ever. And as a result of that, things became a little bit more unsustainable. It's not that crazy. I don't think that's that far-fetched of an idea. And then you look at what the Chiefs did, which is they traded up for Kareem Hunt. They actually went out and they wanted Kareem Hunt. They traded up because they wanted Kareem Hunt. And he was a do-it-all back in college at Toledo. And I just wouldn't be shocked if he steps up midseason or at some point and takes on that lead back role in Kansas City. The bottom line with this, though, and this kind of question, is that the guy who steps up and starts to perform over the starter is the guy who's stepping up for an injured starter. That's generally how it goes in football and in fantasy football. That's just how it works. This next one is from @EricP29. He says, is Tannehill a worthwhile late round QB this year? Guys, Ryan Tannehill is the TV show that you keep watching just because you saw the first two seasons and they were good enough, but now the show is terrible. And you just watch it and you hate your life every single episode, but you watch it because you want to know what happens. Ryan Tannehill is the blacklist. But no, figuring out which quarterback you want to draft late really isn't that important to begin with. And Ryan Tannehill is not the guy that you want to target. I just think that we've sort of seen Ryan Tannehill's general potential. We know who he is, and most importantly, we know what the Dolphins want to do, and that's run the football. First off, Tannehill hasn't had more than 7 top 12 performances at the quarterback position in a single year over his entire career. For some context, 7 top 12 QB1 weekly performances out of 15 weeks. I remove week 17 from this type of analysis. That was hit by 14 quarterbacks last year, and that's the most he's ever had across his career. Secondly, in week 6, when Jay Ajayi became a thing and he started seeing the bulk of the work in the Dolphins' backfield, of the 8 fantasy-relevant games since that point, Tannehill scored more than 20 points just once, and he hit 10 or fewer points 3 different times. He's just not a great fantasy quarterback. He's a very, very average, potentially below average starter in the league. And there's no reason to think that he'd be the upside guy that you would want to take late. This next one's from @Tsuna1. He says, how depleted does an offensive line have to be for it to affect production at quarterback? Does it have to be at the level of last year's Broncos? I'll be honest, I don't have a real answer for this because it's very hard to have a blanket answer for this. With offensive lines, you have to take it kind of case by case. For instance, Russell Wilson struggled behind a bad offensive line for a while now. But Russell Wilson is also a very special quarterback who's incredibly mobile. So in turn, I care a lot less about their bad offensive line than I do for a traditional pocket passer. You can also look at this from the perspective of skill personnel. You know, I tweeted the other day that I really like Andy Dalton this year from a fantasy standpoint. Late round guy, he's going to be free for you to draft. I've mentioned on this podcast before, he's got positive touchdown regression coming or progression coming in the touchdown rate department, which is a really big indicator of potential upcoming success. They just drafted Joe Mixon. They got John Ross. They already have AJ Green and Tyler Eifert. And what am I doing there? I'm naming really great personnel assets and skill position players that this Bengals team has. So while that offensive line took a big hit this offseason, I'm a little bit less concerned because defenses aren't going to be able to put as much pressure on Andy Dalton because there are so many weapons in this offense. And I also think you have to look at things like offensive scheme and the way that the quarterbacks are throwing passes in terms of depth. You know, if you look at a Bruce Arians offense, they like to throw the ball vertically. He likes to throw the ball vertically. And so if Carson Palmer doesn't have a strong offensive line, I'm going to be a little bit worried. Whereas Matthew Stafford and that Jim Bob Cooter offense, he's throwing very short passes. They almost replace the running game with those types of passes. I'm less concerned about the offensive line as a result of that. It's a really, really great question, but it's one where there's not one blanket answer, but hopefully running through those examples helped you at least a little bit. This next one is from @JamieTheTweeter. Cam had a terrible completion percentage last season. You'd assume this will get better with short McCaffrey routes. Any evidence a running back that catches helps? Well, first off, Cam Newton has a terrible completion percentage every year. Let's not forget that. But shorter average depth of target throws will certainly help a completion percentage. And running backs catch passes closer to the line of scrimmage. So naturally, any sort of addition from that regard will help. But I do want to take this time to talk about completion percentage because it's one of the statistics that is just so worthless and overly used, and we need to stop using it. And this is nothing against you, Jamie, who tweeted this at me. I know what you're trying to say here, and I'm not even saying that you're someone who takes completion percentage to heart. It's just a really good opportunity to talk about completion percentage. It's a bad, bad metric. Think about what it's saying. It's saying completions divided by the number of passes. You're looking at two statistics that don't tell you about ball placement or where the ball was thrown. You need depth of target and depth of completion to help tell the bigger story. Yes, regardless, Cam Newton is not an accurate passer. So completion percentage says Cam Newton was not accurate last year, but even when you adjust for everything, Cam Newton was not accurate last year. And to answer the question, things will become more accurate as they bring the offense closer to the line of scrimmage with a guy like McCaffrey or even Curtis Samuel. But I think the bigger question we should ask is not about what his completion percentage is going to look like. It's, can Cam Newton consistently make those throws? That's a different type of question to ask. From one perspective, you're looking at the result, and will Christian McCaffrey help? The answer is yes, Christian McCaffrey will help. But Cam Newton needs to be able to make those throws. This offense is going to look a lot different next year. The front office has made that known, that they don't draft a guy like Christian McCaffrey without changing something offensively. And the success of this offense is going to come down to how well Cam Newton can make those throws. This next one was an email. It says, "Hi JJ, what are your thoughts on Terrence Williams as wide receiver 7 and MFL 10? Seems underrated for a starting wide receiver. Regards, Gleb." It might have been Lord Reeves, at Lord Reeves, Rich Rebar, who said this once, and we just kind of ran with it. Rich and I are super tight, good friends, and so we generally bounce ideas off of one another, and this might have come up randomly in conversation, but we considered Terrence Williams the Marcus Wheaton of Dallas. He's not very good, but he's in a good offense opposite an elite receiver, so we've always kind of gravitated towards him. Now, obviously, Marcus Wheaton's not in Pittsburgh anymore, and this analogy was made a couple years ago, but I think the point is very clear, and it makes sense. Terrence Williams just isn't that good, and he's not good in fantasy despite having opportunity in the past in a good offense with good quarterback play. You know, in best ball leagues, in these MFL 10s, you want upside. That's the number one thing that you want. Well, in 2013, Terrence Williams had just two top 12 performances in PPR leagues. In 2014, he had two. 2015, he had one, which is when he had all that opportunity, granted, with bad quarterback play. Last year, he didn't have a single one. So with a healthy Dez Bryant, Terrence Williams sits around a 12 to 14% market share. That's what we've seen with a healthy Dez Bryant in that offense. But we have to remember that it's a run-first offense. And when it's a run-first offense and you are only seeing a 12 to 14% market share, you're not going to see that much volume. Like, here are some of the wide receivers, just for some context, that saw between 12 and 14% market share last season. You have Victor Cruz, Robbie Anderson, Marquise Goodwin, Tyler Boyd, Muhammad Sanu, and Seth Roberts. You have guys who, a lot of them are in more pass-friendly offenses with just as good, maybe not as good, but decent quarterback play. I'm not saying that I would take those guys over Terrence Williams. I'm just saying that what Terrence Williams has, despite being a starter, just isn't special. So to me, he doesn't have a high enough ceiling. He's not even going to give you those big weeks individually. So no, I'm not going to promote or tout or tell you to draft Terrence Williams. This next one is from Matt Wotesco. He says, "Any love for Carlos Hyde this season? Does he get a boost from this new offense?" Carlos Hyde, first off, wasn't that great of a prospect, at least according to my model, coming out. During his final season, he had a barely above average speed score. He had an above average attempts per game, barely, but all of his market share numbers were below average, both rushing and receiving. And we have to remember that this regime in San Francisco is not tied to him at all. And they draft Joe Williams, who Kyle Shanahan said, there's a great article on Monday Morning Quarterback by Peter King about the San Francisco war room during the draft. You guys should give it a read. But one thing that Kyle Shanahan said was, quote, "I'm telling you right now, if we don't get him, Joe Williams, I'll be sick. I will be contemplating Joe Williams all night. Kyle Shanahan likes Joe Williams. Now, what's interesting too is that the last time Shanahan had an offense that was this bad personnel-wise, obviously the last 2 years in Atlanta, you're looking at a pretty good offense from a skill position perspective and a great quarterback in Matt Ryan. It was back in Cleveland in 2014. That year, the Browns had a near pass-to-run ratio as what we saw from San Francisco last year. It was 1.07 versus 1.05, and they ran the sixth most rushing plays in football. So that 2014 team was a very run-first team. And that 2014 team also had Brian Hoyer. They had a backfield with at least one rookie. They had Crowell and Terrence West, who were both rookies that season. And then they had Ben Tate. And then they had bad pass catchers. Does that not look exactly like what we have in San Francisco? The Browns' offensive line was good. Their defense was very underrated that year. I'm just trying to draw some parallels into what we could potentially see from Kyle Shanahan's offense this year. So Crowell and West were both rookies that year, like I said. They saw 171 and 148 carries, respectively, with Ben Tate seeing 106. They won seven games. So we have to think that they saw some positive game scripts where San Francisco's going to be lucky to win five or six, I would say. So if San Francisco wins seven games, that would be surprising. But the parallels really are kind of crazy. But I'll say this, even though there could be a more run-heavy approach than we might initially think, given how bad this team's going to potentially be, look, this is all hypothetical right now, but even if the opportunity doesn't look like it'll be there because of these negative game scripts that San Francisco is going to face, there's no chance I can buy Carlos Hyde at his current price. He's a third-round pick, according to Fantasy Football Calculator, an early third-round pick at that, which is just absurdly high. I was actually shocked. I fell off my chair when I learned that. My dog was looking at me. My dog ran to me because he was so worried after I saw Carlos Hyde's ADP. That's just way too high for a guy in an offense that's not going to score many points. He might see 200 plus carries, but that doesn't matter when your team is not scoring points. You need goal line opportunities. You need to score touchdowns to be a good back in fantasy football. And generally in these situations, if I know there's going to be a split backfield where one guy's going to be the 1A, the other guy's going to be the 1B, I'm going to draft the 1B, especially when it's in an offense that's not going to score a lot of points. So with that in mind, I'm going to be owning Joe Williams in fantasy this year. Or at least I'm going to own him over Carlos Hyde, because it's not like that there's a lot of upside in this offense. I mean, Isaiah Crowell and Terrence West were RB28 and RB32 when Kyle Shanahan was there in Cleveland in 2014. You need to score touchdowns as a running back, or you want touchdowns as an owner of a running back in fantasy football. So I'm going to get the cheaper of the two. Joe Williams is going to be my guy. I'm fading Carlos Hyde so much this season. Matt actually sent another question, and I thought it was really good, so I figured that I'd talk about it. It's actually going to be a little bit of a tease, because I think I could do a whole podcast episode on it, but he said, do you tier your positional rankings or rank them numerically in the order you'd choose them and why? So I mentioned earlier that Rich Rebar and I are tight, and we actually draft very similarly, because we draft with our tiers not by grouping them by how many fantasy points they're going to score, but we group them by how they accumulate fantasy points. The reason for that is because when you group players by tiers, so the way that people use tiers is that they have their rankings, and then they draw circles. Let's just picture this. They draw circles around players who are going to score similar point totals. And then when there's a big drop, that's when the circle ends. That's when the new tier starts. What you're basically saying is the guy at the top of the tier is fairly interchangeable with the guy at the bottom of the tier. But that's not how fantasy football necessarily works on a week-to-week basis. The way fantasy football works on a week-to-week basis is guys are accumulating points in different ways. A guy who scores 100 fantasy points could score 50 of them in 1 week, and then the rest of the fantasy points are randomly scattered throughout the other weeks. That doesn't tell you as much as the guy who's consistently scoring 7 or 8 points every single week. When you look at one number, projected fantasy points, it doesn't tell you the whole story. So what I do is I will tier players or draft. At this point in time, I can usually just draft without a strict sheet to follow, But if I draft Jarvis Landry, let's say, I don't want to draft Golden Tate. I want to draft DeSean Jackson. If I draft DeSean Jackson, I'm not going to probably look at Martavis Bryant. I'm going to look at Jarvis Landry. I want to have a guy with a floor and a guy with a ceiling to not just give me consistent weeks week in and week out, but then I'll also have potential blow-up weeks. I want guys who are accumulating points consistently for my team, all while having a ceiling. Having only ceiling guys is a very volatile strategy, and having only floor guys is also volatile in terms of winning games each week. You need that balance on your team, and I think that the best way to do that is by looking at player archetypes and tiering them that way and balancing your roster that way, both with running backs and wide receivers, because you can do the same thing with running backs as well. You build them and you build your roster based on how they accumulate points, not how many points they're going to accumulate. So this last question is going to be a little bit deeper because there's going to be a lot of answers to it, but it was from Michael through an email. He says, "Hey JJ, who are some current players that stand out as being dramatically over or undervalued according to ADP, average draft position, specifically for MFL 10 formats, but you can apply this to any format that you would prefer. Thanks for the great work." Well, thanks for your question, Michael. I appreciate it, buddy. I could go on and on about a lot of players here, but hopefully I'll try to keep this a little bit concise because I don't know if you guys realize this, but I can talk. I can talk a lot. About football, I will talk for days. About the blacklist, I will shut up anyone who wants to talk about the blacklist because that show is an abomination. Remember, guys, the blacklist is the Ryan Tannehill of television shows. But I'll try in this to answer this. I'll try to go in order of where they're being drafted by using Josh's. That's Fantasy ADHD on Twitter. His great tool at fantasyadhd.com/MFL10_live. Josh gives you ADP data of MFL10s. You need to utilize this data. The first guy who stands out to me that's being dramatically overvalued is Todd Gurley. I mentioned earlier, I want to associate my running backs in good offenses because that increases their chances of scoring. Will the Rams offense be better this season? Yes, because it's almost impossible for it to be worse. But they also drafted Cooper Kupp, so who the hell knows? But Todd Gurley had 10 attempts within the 5-yard line last year, despite seeing 74.13% of his team's carries. Todd Gurley had the greatest, the highest market share in football last season at running back, and he had as many attempts within his opponent's 5-yard line as Rob Kelly did. Rob Kelly saw 30% fewer of his team's rushing attempts, and it's because there aren't good scoring opportunities in bad offenses. So even if this offense is a little bit better, which again, it can't be much worse, his ceiling is just so capped to spend a second round pick on him. I mean, my goodness. People were taking him right next to DeMarco Murray. DeMarco Murray is the lead back in a run-first offense with an efficient quarterback and a great offensive line. What are you guys doing? Come on, we're better than this. If Todd Gurley outscores DeMarco Murray, I will be shocked. It can happen, because anything happens, but process-wise and logically, there is no reason at all to take Todd Gurley over DeMarco Murray in fantasy football. None. The next guy who jumps out as being very overvalued is DeAndre Hopkins. I wasn't on Hopkins last year. I wrote an article about him on NumberFire, not because I don't like him as a player, but his opportunity isn't as good as it looks from a volume standpoint. If you look at his splits in 2015, the first half of the season versus the second half of the season, when that defense started playing well the second half of 2015, when they started winning games because of that defense, DeAndre Hopkins ended up being more of a high-end wide receiver 2 than the wide receiver 1 that we thought that he was. DeAndre Hopkins, the first half of 2015, was on pace to break the targets record in what we know as a run-first offense. Now the team has Will Fuller and other pass catchers that can demand some sort of volume, and they're getting looks from whoever the hell's under center for them. It doesn't matter. You have either Deshaun Watson or Tom Savage, which is not good. You might look at them at either of these quarterbacks as upgrades over Brock Osweiler, and I won't argue that. I really won't. But this team wants to run the football. DeAndre Hopkins saw 25.9% of his team's targets last year. He ended up with 151 targets, but those targets are not even close to the same as someone like T.Y. Hilton. So even with a similar market share and a similar run-first mentality on offense, he could see 150 targets, sure, but DeAndre Hopkins' touchdown upside isn't that strong because of the quarterback situation, and you're taking him with a second round pick. I can't get behind it. Some other guys, just to throw out there that I don't really understand from an overvalued standpoint, Alshon Jeffrey, what is going on here? Why is Alshon Jeffrey a third round pick? He's in a conservative offense with Zach Ertz, Torrey Smith, and Jordan Matthews. Why are people drafting Alshon Jeffrey so high? I mentioned Carlos Hyde. I think he's really overvalued. And I also think that Brandon Cooks is being overvalued. If you want some reasoning on why Cooks is overvalued, you can go Google five players whose fantasy stock took a hit since free agency started with the word number fire. And you'll find the number fire article that I wrote. He's on the fifth slide. I talk about Brandon Cooks. I'm really worried about Brandon Cooks' market share. On the underrated side, on the other side of the spectrum, I think you have to look at Pierre Garçon as wide receiver 49, despite the fact that he's going to walk into 100 plus targets very, very easily this year. I mean, have you guys seen their depth chart? His competition for targets is Bruce Ellington, Marquise Goodwin, and Jeremy Curley. I mean, he's being drafted after Mike Williams right now. Mike Williams is a tree in a forest right now from a target standpoint. I mean, he's just sitting in the woods with a bunch of other trees trying to get attention from his quarterback. But my favorite value has to be Ted Ginn. It has to be Ted Ginn. People hate Ted Ginn. They hate Ted Ginn because he drops passes. I don't know how many times I have to talk about it on this podcast. If you want to listen to why drops are stupid, go listen to episode 4, maybe? Maybe it was episode 2, actually, with Matt Harmon. We talked about drops for a good 10 minutes on that show. Drops are so overrated, and that's why people hate Ted Ginn. But if you look at this fit, he's now in New Orleans. Last year, Drew Brees was 8th in the NFL in passing attempts that traveled 15 or more yards through the air, ending the season with the most passing yards in football on those types of throws, because Drew Brees is pretty good at football. He's pretty good at throwing footballs. This isn't anything new. He ranked 3rd in yards on passes that went 15 plus air yards in 2015, 2nd in 2014, 1st in 2013, 4th in 2012, and 2nd in 2011. Drew Brees throws the ball down the field and he does it really well. Ginn might see a lower market share than he did in Carolina, maybe by 2 or 3, maybe 4%. But the Saints throw the ball a lot more than Carolina does, and he's getting a more efficient quarterback. And more importantly, he is wide receiver 64 in MFL 10s right now. While getting, we know Ted Ginn gets you those big weeks. Ted Ginn is meant for MFL 10s. He's in the Saints offense, and he's wide receiver 64. We're better than this. Like, Ted Ginn could realistically be a top 30 wide receiver this year. He is perfect for the New Orleans Saints offense. Some other guys who I think are undervalued right now, I think you look at both Baltimore wide receivers because they didn't draft an offensive skill player. Breshad Perriman, talked about him on the last episode. He should be higher than he's being drafted right now. I'm kind of intrigued by Zay Jones, who looks pretty good in my prospect model, and he should see decent volume despite the fact that he's in a run-first offense. And I think that Frank Gore needs to be going higher since Marlon Mack was the only running back that they drafted. And Marlon Mack at this point in time does profile to be somewhat more of a scat back. I do think that Marlon Mack is capable of carrying some early down work. And I think that he will dig into Frank Gore's workload a bit. And the way that I'm approaching that situation is in season long, once drafts actually happen, I could envision some teams I'll own Frank Gore, some teams I'll own Marlon Mack. I'm not a big handcuffer. I'll probably do a podcast on why I'm not. But Frank Gore, I think, is very, very undervalued right now. I'm going to assume that Samaje Perine rises. But I think the last guy I want to mention is don't forget about Jonathan Williams in Buffalo. He's the number two back in an offense that will be one of the most run-heavy in football. And it's one that saw the number two back see 101 carries and 93 carries the last two seasons with Carlos Williams and Mike Gillisley. And then on top of that, if something were to happen to LeSean McCoy, all of a sudden you have a potential low-end RB1, just on opportunity alone. So Jonathan Williams is definitely a guy that you guys should at least be targeting late in your MFL 10 drafts. I want to thank you guys all for listening to another mailbag episode. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at LateRoundQB. Make sure you subscribe to the show by searching for NumberFire NFL Podcasts on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google Play. Otherwise, guys, I'll talk to you next week.